Hey, friends. Greg Kokel here. Standard Reason is the show, and looking forward to chatting with you today about anything that's on your mind in the area of ethics, values, and religion. Our number, 855-243-9975. You can dial that up anytime during Tuesdays from 4 until 6 p.m. That would be Los Angeles time, and we can chat about your question or your complaint or your issue or your point of view, as long as it's broadly within that category. You know, last week I mentioned that in my nearly 30 years of doing this show, I've consistently had callers tell me how thrilled they are to be part of a special group of SDR people that we call strategic partners. They'll actually start out their conversation by saying, look, I got a question, but before I get to that, I just want to say this. And then they tell me they're a strategic partner. That means they have a set monthly financial gift that they pledged every month to Stand to Reason. And they're thrilled to be part of Stand to Reason in that way. And then they challenge those who are listening to join the ranks with them and consider being a strategic partner, too. Now, I have never once solicited that challenge from them. They offer it, for two basic reasons. One of them, and this is one something I want you to think about, they've been so enriched over the years by what we've offered to them on a weekly basis with our podcasts, and also through our website and all the other things that we do. They've been so enriched that they wanted to become active partners in what we do. And the second thing that they reflect back to me is that it's brought them a tremendous amount of satisfaction to be part of our team. And that's what they've told me. And this is why I unabashedly advanced the same challenge to you. I want you to consider taking up the challenge they've offered over the years and doing it this month by becoming a strategic partner, because this month we're looking to recruit 100 new strategic partners. I'll tell you, by the way, I mentioned this last week, but we're almost halfway there. People are responding really well, and I think partly they're responding because they have benefited so much from STR that they want to, I don't even want to say give back like they owe us. They want to participate in a different way and help so many others as well through what we do. And in addition to that, there are a lot of perks to being a strategic partner, which I'll get to in just a moment. But what I want you to know, if you participate this month, that is, if you climb on board with a pledge of a particular gift that you'll give every month, there's an added bonus that we'll give you, because your monthly pledge will have an immediate impact in the life of a very specific young person. Because this month, when you give an automatic monthly gift, your entire first month gift, whatever that is, whatever you pledge monthly, that is going to be used to purchase tickets for students to attend one of our Rethink Apologetics conferences. And the way it breaks down is a $40 pledge, first month's gift, we'll send one student because it's 40 bucks to send them to Rethink. Pledge 80, you get two students. You pledge 120, you get three students. I think that's how the math works. And et cetera, et cetera. That's the way we do it. Your first gift, whatever it happens to be, we're going to set aside to send somebody in your name to Rethink. And if you pledge less than 40, that's okay. We'll cobble that pledge together with other smaller pledges to make up $40 increments that will be able to purchase tickets for students as well. I mentioned our goal this month is to get 100 new strategic partners, and that will mean at least 100 scholarships for students to get equipped to defend their faith. You can just go to str.org right now, and right on the banner right there, be one of the 100, you can respond to that. And by the way, besides sending a student to our Rethink Apologetics Conference, and besides providing the kind of resources that we provide, articles, podcasts, videos, and all of that, helping us to do that, people making a difference to people all around the world, as a strategic partner, you're going to also get a 10% discount in the online store. You're going to get something free that we send you twice a year. We're going to have exclusive live events that you can participate in. This is what we've been doing for years with that special group called Strategic Partners. We'll give you access to our special Strategic Partner Facebook page. There'll be mentoring sessions hosted by STR speakers, bi-monthly Strategic Partner Insider updates. We just want to treat you like the special people that you are to us, because you are the backbone of our organization. And we could not do what we do without being able to count on you month after month after month. And so we're inviting the rest of you to join this group, become part of our team. There's no question in my mind that we are in a fight. We're at war after a fashion, in a very genuine fashion, and we need as many courageous soldiers in play as possible. So I'm challenging you to be one of the 100. Just simply go to str.org, and then right on the banner, you can click the banner, and they'll walk you through it there. So in light of that, be one of the 100 project, I've asked my close friend and one of our board members and a strategic partner, Dr. Greg Hazen, to join us for a few minutes. And Craig, of course, is the wonderful mind behind the wonderful MA Apologetics program at Biola University. And Craig, I was trying to figure out how long we've actually known each other.
You know, it has to be close to 25 years.
Oh, I think it's more than that, because we go back to the Simon Greenleaf days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of the 80s, the early 90s. So this is like, I mean, we're pressing 30 years, maybe? I don't know. That's a long time, brother.
Yeah, and I survived the whole thing.
You did. You know, I just was thinking about this, though, because you were running the MA in Apologetics program at Simon Greenleaf University at that time, and I was just finishing up that MA when you transferred over to Biola to start the program there, as I recall. Is that right?
That's right.
And, of course, that's been the famous program that's outpaced all others, really set the standard for other MA programs that have been popping up following your example around the country. But that was also very soon after that that I finished my program and then transferred over to the MA Phil program at Biola, and continued, you know, side by side with you and the other guys over there, learning more that would eventually pay off huge dividends in Stand to Reason. Something else occurred to me, Craig, while I was thinking about our past together, and that is, I don't think people realize this, but I think you were a significant influence in me developing the tactics material. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I do. You know, I used to listen to you on the radio, and I go, man, there's nobody who can do that kind of just wide-open question-taking over the airwaves and give such consistently good answers. How does this guy do it? You came in, and you actually taught this. It was kind of a fledgling form of your tactics material to our students in a sort of a night lecture series.
Yeah, that's
one night,
right.
And you gave them the goods, and I said, oh, that is dynamite. It's got to be into a book. Now, you probably already had that in mind down the road, but I may have pushed you into it a little faster than you might have gone.
Yeah, well, you were a significant player in that, an encouragement. I don't know if I was thinking of a book at that time, to be quite honest. I had my hands full just with the material. I had been using these things and developing some of these ideas, and then you said, hey, let's teach a class, and that encouraged me to formulate these ideas that have come to be called the tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. That's the subtitle of the book. But that was the first time. I actually have a very clear picture in my mind, Craig, of doing this at Simon Greenleaf University and having you there and the students, whatever. And then that launched this enterprise. And I think that you were the first person who said, you ought to write a book. Now, it took me about 15 years to get around to doing that. But all of that time, though, I was working on that material and cultivating it and crafting it in a little different way. So when the book came around, you know, at least I had really worked through this stuff a lot more to give somebody something substantive in terms of a book treatment of that. So I got to thank you for helping me out and encourage me all those
years. My pleasure.
Years.
And that book remains one of the most popular books that people are reading in the realm of apologetics, including our Master of Arts students, who are learning a great deal of substantive apologetics, but when it comes to actually communicating it in an effective way, your book on tactics is the go-to place for our students.
Thanks. And I think of the what I explain to people is that what's missing a lot of times in our education is a bridge from the content to the conversation or from the scholarship to the relationship. And this is what the book is meant to do. And now a 10-year anniversary this year, and in November we'll be releasing, and I think you know about this, the second edition, 40% more material, 6 more chapters. All the improvements that I've made on the material in the last 10 years I've put in this new edition, so I'm really excited about that.
Well, the word's out on that already. I was just talking to some random people the other day, and they're like, can you believe there's going to be 40% more material in Craig's new book on tactics? Yeah. I think they're shocked that there was 40% more you could pack in there.
Yeah, well, it's just things that aggregated over the years and ways that I've tried to expand on some of the things that were in the basic book. So I'm looking forward to that. Listen, I'm curious, though. I'm just trying to think of our history because we want to talk a little bit about the Be the One of the 100 project, you know, that we're doing right now with cultivating new relationships, new strategic partner relationships. And you and I knew each other, obviously, before Stand to Reason started. So, I mean, well, I was going to ask you, when did you first become aware of Stand to Reason? But you probably became aware of it when I was becoming aware of it, too.
That's right. I remember, I don't know that it had its name yet, but you and Melinda were in the back of a bowling alley that happened to be a church. Probably inside a Starbucks. I'm not sure where it was, but there you were with a desk and a dot matrix printer, and there you were starting the whole ministry.
That's right. That was in the back rooms of in the bowels, so to speak, of Hope Chapel in Hermosa Beach, where I'd served as a staff pastor for about 8 years, and they gave us a windowless room, a concrete room, way behind the stacked chairs, and that's where we started out. You're right, and you're now a board member. Of course, you are the oldest board member, meaning the longest serving board member at Stand to Reason. And I hope for my sake, I never lose you. Tell me about your early days on the board and what you've done as a board member over the years.
Those were fun times. In fact, it was a strange time. Like many young organizations that first form, you get a board together, and you're not sure about everybody on the board, but then, you know, little wars and skirmishes can break out, and there were some strange things going on.
There were early on, I agree.
Early on. But it didn't matter, though. It was very clear that the Lord was with the organization and with the vision you and Melinda had for this thing. And it captured all of us, and then we overcame the skirmishes, and we went forward, and I think that was just a little bit of testing in the early days to see if this thing was going to go and if the vision could stand that kind of trial, and it did.
Right, yeah. There were some challenges there, and you were not on the first board, but you were there with the first board members, so you're like the first generation of new people.
Yeah.
And so you really saw from the very beginning, we're in our 26th year, I imagine that you came on board maybe 2 or 3 years into the enterprise, something like that.
That's right.
Thinking very generally, and you were thankfully, for me, a very stabilizing influence. I mean, I trusted your judgment and still do. I mean, it's that's why I never want to lose you on the board. You bring something also to Stand to Reason, and we talked with Kirby Bradford last week. Kirby and most of the other board members are businessmen. You're the only person that's ministry-related, but you're not a pastor. You run a significant national ministry with a worldwide impact, really. And I think that brings something unique to our enterprise. You're not just a pastor bringing spiritual insight. You are a godly Christian man like the others, but you understand how ministry works in a large scale and how the church operates because you've been around it so long. And I think that's tremendous help for me as a president and for us as an organization.
Well, thanks. And it's not like it's a one-way street, me giving to Stand to Reason in those various areas. Oh, my goodness. One reason I like being on the board is because I learn so much on a regular basis, too, from the very beginning. One thing that really impressed me about this new organization was, I don't know, the style of communication, just to start with. The fact that when you were on the radio, you always wanted to give your opponents the last word, for instance. That really had an impact on me, to watch just gracious, thoughtful, kind Christianity go out and win the argument so many times, but do it in such a gracious fashion. Mm-hmm. And in the ministry, there's always been such a wonderful coherence. I just love how you guys would sit down and really think through all of the elements of the ministry and have them all work so well together. That just really made an impact on me.
Well, the Lord has really helped us. I didn't come from a corporate background, you know, but we had some ideas, and we've tried to honor God in everything we've done and model a different way of doing apologetics. My sense early on, Craig, when we started to formulate this enterprise, was that Christianity was both too shallow for most Christians facing the challenge of the secular culture, and it was too shrill. And there was something that we could offer by modeling and training. And so I'm glad that God has prospered that in the last 26 years and counting. I mean, we're in our 27th now. It's just amazing. But having the capable leadership that you have brought on a board level and the others over the years has been really helpful to me. I'm not sure if I mentioned this last week or not, but people need to know. And maybe you could say something about this, Craig, that on our board, I mean, I'm the president, and the president has one vote.
That's right.
I'm not the chairman. I don't run the board. Everybody rubber stamps what I have to say. We are all independent thinkers, and fortunately, we're on the same page most of the time. But this is a genuine governing board, and it provides, from my perspective, tremendous safety for the organization and for me as president.
It does, and there are some really smart guys on this board, too. There are wonderful friends who I call up when I have some issues, you know, in their fields of expertise, and there are many. And it's just a wonderful group that has come together to support the ministry and offer just top-level expertise. But it's interesting how you, when you set the tone in the early days, Greg, you did attract board members who had that same, I don't know, that same view of excellence, the same vision. And it just reminds me in the early days when you guys are first getting a lot of material up on the website. You know, to this day, str.org is my first go-to place when an issue comes up. Why? Well, because if there's an issue that comes up, let's say it's the nature of marriage, something like that, I know that there's going to be an article that's really well thought out and that is communicated brilliantly, and it's going to be of great value to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just know it, and I don't have to do all the work. I go right to str.org, and that begins my own research on the topic. And sometimes it's so good, it ends right there.
Yeah. Well, we're so glad to make that contribution to your life. Of course, we have had this kind of joined-at-the-hip relationship between Stand to Reason and Biola over the years, and there's been a whole bunch of people that kind of come through our door, so to speak, and then go from us to you guys and go through your programs, both the apologetics program, the in-situ one on campus, or the one that, you know, the distance learning program, or the MA Phil program. And I have been so thrilled to see our relationship personally, you and I, and then the relationship that we have had with Biola to continue to grow. And it's really something that we set out at the very beginning to work creatively and productively and non-competitively with other Christian organizations that had the same vision that we did. And I mention this now because I'm speaking now to our listeners, because we want you to invest yourself in what we're doing. But I know you think about this stuff and you pray about it and you want to invest wisely. I think this is a place where your partnership will be well used, well invested with Stand to Reason. We have 26 years of a track record where we have built little by little by little. And I call it singles and doubles. every time up to bat. We're like the Cal Ripkins. You remember, Craig, when I would mention early on how frustrated it was that we were like the best-kept secret kind of thing? But we kept plodding away, and then we had a board meeting. I said, you know what? We're no longer the best-kept secret, but it's not because of some big bash we did and got a lot of publicity in the news for one event, but because we always showed up. And that's what I mean by the Cal Ripkins, you know. We're there for every game. We just hit singles and doubles every time up to bat, consistently being available for the people to meet their needs. And that's the kind of thing that I want to encourage others of our listeners, Craig, to invest in the long term.
Yeah, you know, I'm amazed when I think back to the history of the organization, how many ministries STR has launched that are now working as partners in the broader ministry field around the world. J. Warner Wallace and Cold Case Christianity.
Right.
Brett Kunkel and Maven. Scott Klusendorf and Life Training Institute. Steve Wagner and Justice for All.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all people at the top of their game who sort of honed their skills working through Stand to Reason.
Yeah, well, J. Warner was listening to our radio show before he was even a Christian. He was still an atheist.
Yeah.
And so he kind of came up right through the ranks. And there were other, obviously, influences in his life than just us. But, you know, he credits Stand to Reason having a huge impact in his own spiritual formation and formation as a Christian thinker. Anyway, what would you say for that person's out there that's kind of on the fence right now about becoming a strategic partner?
Yes, in case. This could be the danger here. We're talking about this long history. People could be going, well, it sounds like they may have seen their best days. Oh, I don't think that's the case at all. Although Greg's a really old guy now, okay, I am just amazed at how you guys keep opening up new doors.
Mm-hmm.
These Rethink conferences for young people. Who would have thought that Stand to Reason would be heading this up? And honestly, I run big national events all the time. I did not predict that you would get thousands of young people out to these Rethink events.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cutting-edge material. And it's not designed for youth. It's designed for thinking adults who happen to be young. And this is something that this may be the longest-lasting impact STR has. The kind of impact you're having on young people. You are actually training up a generation. We will look back 25 years from now, looking at, wow, that is where some of the most important work was done.
Well, God willing, that's the cutting edge people today. Yeah, God willing, that's the case. And my view is that the most important generation is always the next generation for the church. And just so you know, I got an updated numbers for our September event in Costa Mesa. I'm looking for the date here, Orange County, September 27th and 28th. So what is that, 6 weeks out?
Yeah.
We're 13 people shy of 1,500 already signed up.
Oh, that's going to be another sellout.
Oh, man, I can't even believe it. Yeah, it's fabulous, and this just shows that people are responding. So if folks want to, they want to invest in something with a future, a long future. Whether I have a long future or not, it's not relevant. Because, and I'll tell you this, you know this, Craig, but I'm going to tell it to the listeners because I know this is sometimes hard to grasp. I am not the same as Stand to Reason. I work for Stand to Reason. This is much bigger than any one personality. It's something that God has been doing for over a quarter of a century and will continue to do so after the founding father is out of the picture. When that's going to be, I don't know. You know, we're thinking long-term transition and everything, but we're trying to build a big foundation that's not grounded in my personality. And I'm so appreciative to you, Craig, for your leadership as a board member and, of course, the other board members as well, and for your encouragement. For those who would be considering being one of the 100 this month and signing up to be a strategic partner.
Yeah, and I hope they do. This is a great way to get tickets in the hands of people who can't afford them for the next Rethink conference.
That's right. That's a bonus for signing up this month. So we're almost halfway there, and we're not even done with the month. So I'm encouraging people, go to str.org, and right there in a banner is where you can sign up and become a strategic partner at whatever level you are comfortable with. But you'll become a regular member of our financial community at Stand to Reason. And we got lots of ways to encourage you and thank you for that when you do. Hey, Craig, thank you for all of your kind service and the great relationship, 30 years in running here between you and I, and we'll grow all together fighting as hardworking soldiers for the kingdom's sake.
Amen.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Craig.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Craig Hazen, like I said, the mind, the wonderful mind behind the wonderful MA Apologetics Program at Biola University, and long-term friend and board member and strategic partner for Stand to Reason. STR.org, be one of the 100 this month. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Be back in just a moment.
Did you know Stand to Reason has a YouTube channel? We release a new video each Monday on the topics you care about. Through short, engaging videos, our speakers train you on tactics, offer apologetics tips, answer common theology questions, and address big issues in the world today. Join tens of thousands of other subscribers so you can stay up to date when we release a new video. Just go to youtube.com and search STR Videos, all one word, and hit the subscribe button. That's STR Videos. Take advantage of this free resource to help you stay informed, encouraged, and equipped as you share your worldview with others.
We are at war. It's not a war of bombs and bayonets. It's not a war against flesh and blood. In fact, it's not a physical war at all. It's a spiritual war. That's why Paul instructs us to put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. The devil's primary scheme is deception. He wants us to believe false ideas about God. And the only way to guard against false ideas is to fill our minds with true ideas. Simply put, we combat deception with truth. It's unfathomable to imagine sending young men and women off to fight a physical war without proper training. Yet, when it comes to spiritual warfare, we do this all the time. The vast majority of our students are simply not prepared for the spiritual battle that awaits them. At this year's Rethink Apologetics Student Conferences, we're training students to counter the lies of the enemy. Lies like God does not exist, God is anti-gay, Muslims and Christians worship the same God are just a few of the false ideas we'll be addressing. So join me and a number of other speakers at one of this year's Rethink Apologetics Student Conferences. Find out more information about Rethink by going to rethinkapologetics.com. That's rethinkapologetics.com.
Should Christians study false ideas or just stick to scripture and Christian theology? Well, in the latest episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud with Alan Schliemann, I offer four reasons why Christians should add the study of false ideas to their to-do list. Look for my podcast on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
Just a reminder, I made reference to it a few moments ago, but our big event coming up September 27th and 28th, that is Rethink Apologetics student conference. We're targeting middle schoolers and high schoolers and college kids. Of course, we're not checking IDs, so anybody can come to this conference at Costa Mesa in the evening of Friday night and all day Saturday. And J. Warner Wallace is going to be there. We're just talking about him. Christopher Yuan, Sean McDowell will be there, Drew Worsham, I mean, and plus the Stand to Reason crew, Amy Hall and Alan Schliemann and myself, Tim Barnett. It's just, we are so thrilled with these events, and we are opening up Minneapolis. That would be our Midwest event starting November 8th and 9th. It'll be the first shot there, but it's a huge church, Grace Church in Eden Prairie, and they are praying for 3,000. We've never opened up with that much. Our biggest opening was 1,600 in Birmingham, but boy, that's what we're after, and we're just so excited about how God has been using this program. So that's coming up. Also, I'll be on September 7th. I'll be in Las Vegas, Nevada. I used to go there a lot, and it's been a long, long time since I've been there. But Life Baptist Church has invited us out. I'm going to do the story of reality, bad arguments against religion, and evil suffering in the will of God. That's at lifebaptistchurch.com. You can get the skinny there September 7th. And then September 12th, that's midweek, I'll be in Bremerton, Washington, at the Kitsap Prayer Breakfast. Thursday morning topic there is Taking Jesus Seriously. That would be breakfastoutreach.org/locations. So just letting you know some things that I'm doing. Actually, I'm going to be leaving in a couple of days. This is our first hour, right? So this will go out on Wednesday. So Thursday morning, my leave for South America and Paraguay for almost 2 weeks. By the way, that would be the fourth continent that I've been on this year so far, and we're only half done with this year. Okay? Alan Schleem has been four continents this year. So, and we encourage you to be part of Stand to Reason and being one of the 100 strategic partner. We want you to kind of jump on a fast-moving train. God has been doing some magnificent things with us, and we would be thrilled if you wanted to partner with us in that. Anyway, last week, oh, no, it might be 2 weeks now. My goodness. Yeah, 2 weeks ago today, I got back from Uganda, spent a week there, and I haven't told you anything about that. I went there to be first to be part of a conference that Richmond Wandera put together. His organization is called Pastors Discipleship Network, and he has a wonderful vision for training up pastors in Uganda. This is the largest enterprise of its type. There's nothing like this in the country. In this particular case, 650 pastors and pastors' wives and ministry workers got together for a two-day conference to get trained. I was their keynote speaker, so I did their main plenary sessions, but there were others who did that, and I did breakouts with all the pastors. And it was so satisfying for me to be able to make that contribution. Look, it was a long flight to Uganda. I had to go all the way to Amsterdam first. That's like not towards Africa, just if you got your geography right. That's Europe. And then I had to go the same distance south to get to Rwanda first, and then hop over to Entebbe Airport there in Kampala, Uganda, before I got in, and then kind of same dance back. It was grueling, but it doesn't matter, because here I was having an impact on 650 ministry professionals that represented 60,000 Ugandan Christians there, and Uganda is absolutely racked with all kinds of nonsense when it comes to spiritual things. 85% identify as Christians, but the Word Faith movement, the prosperity gospel, is massive there. All kinds of bad teaching and distortions are coming down because people are vulnerable. They don't know from hardly anything. Somebody picks up the Bible and calls himself an apostle and a prophet, and then starts quoting verses, and people start following them, and then they get taken advantage of. And this is why what Richmond is doing is so incredible, to just draw these people in and provide them with foundational tools, teaching that will help them to establish solid communities wherever they go. Most of these pastors are from Kampala, but some had come from outlying areas and didn't speak English, and that's why my main sessions I had translated, and I had to work with a translator. You know, that's always kind of an interesting thing, to work with a translator. The same thing will happen next week, and 2 weeks, actually, when I'm down in South America. I'll not only be translated into Spanish, but it's some Mennonite churches down there, so I'll be translated into German as well. So that's going to be interesting. And using a translator always requires that you slow down. You have to divide your time. So if you have a one-hour talk, it's not quite cut in half, but because you can get a rhythm with a translator where they're talking while you're getting a breath, kind of thing. And we had a very good rhythm with the wonderful translator I had there. So I was able to, I only lost like 30% or 40, 30%, maybe 35% of my actual time. But what you have to do is you have to take these talks that you craft with clever words and illustrations and all of this stuff, and you got to trim it down to fight and weight and speak in more simple terms. You got to take complex things and explain them in straightforward ways and remove all of the colorful language that makes sense to Americans, but in this case would make no sense to Ugandans. So when I say you don't have to swing for the fences, you don't even have to get on base. All I want you to do is get in the batter's box. They have no idea what I'm talking about, although these phrases make sense to you. And it's not just that they don't know much about baseball, because they might know a little bit about baseball, but they won't know how these phrases from baseball are pressed into service for a different meaning in the vocabulary of American English. So so you just have to kind of, like I said, trim it down to fight and wait. And that's not always easy. Requires you cut a lot of material and not be so colorful. But at the same time, there's a kind of refreshing simplicity to it. You just get out there and you say the things that really matter in a straightforward kind of fashion. And in the case of these international events, like in Uganda, and I think the same thing will be true in Paraguay in the next couple of weeks, there is a deep hunger for that kind of thing. And so just speaking the truth in a straightforward fashion, you don't have to be fancy or colorful in order to get a hearing. There was something really odd, though, that I noticed. I've noticed this in the past, like when I was in other places like Romania or Italy or where they had to do some translating, is you can say something really short and then it takes a lot of Ugandan words to say it. And you wonder, why does it take so many words to say that? And then you can say something really long, and then they give a real short Ugandan phrase that covers the bases. It just seems a bit counterintuitive to me. But I want to read something that a pastor said, a Ugandan pastor, after going to a training session kind of like this, not this particular one, but similar. He says, it's true that we're not really feeding our people the right doctrine. Instead, we're chasing demons every Sunday, singing and jumping. No wonder cults are taking our people. We need to go back to the basics of the Bible. Otherwise, we will wind up with empty churches. Most of the cults flocking here claim they know the Bible, and we haven't even taught it well to our own members. And then he says, you have, in the conference that they had gone to, you really challenged us. I'm going back to my church and things and doing things differently. It was great to hear that. Let's see. A little point of information about it being in the Uganda. You know, I had this schedule of what I was supposed to talk on. And so usually then you check the schedule. Here's my talks. Here, I bring my notes for these things. But while I was home, it just occurred to me, you never know what you're going to run into. Maybe somebody will grab you and say, you know, you got a hole in your schedule here. Can you come and address this group or whatever? And it turned out I didn't just address the Pastors Discipleship Network conference, because that ended on Friday. And on Saturday morning, 6 o'clock, I drove 7 hours to another part of the country with another American who was developing at Kampala International University, a group of students in Ashaka, Uganda, that were really interested in apologetics. And so then Saturday did apologetics conference with them and did their Sunday morning service before Monday driving those 7 hours back and getting on a plane at midnight in Kampala and then trekking back to the States. But in any event, so because I knew I had some things scheduled but wasn't sure about something else, I grabbed a couple of other sets of notes that I thought maybe would be useful if they asked me to give a different talk or another talk. So it made sense, it seemed to me. I didn't hear from God. It isn't like the Holy Spirit's prodding me or anything. But I just had this thought. Maybe it'd be a good idea. Maybe it would be smart. It would be wise to bring some extra things. And as it turns out, this thing that made perfect sense in the moment, this thing that was wise, bore fruit because I needed both of those talks. All right. And it turned out that I actually have more things scheduled than I thought, so I had to fill one hole. And one of the other talks I was going to give, it just turned out wasn't going to be appropriate for those set of circumstances. When I got there, I asked Richmond, by the way, this talk here, do you know what this all entails? And he said, no. When I explained it to him, he said, that probably is not going to work. And so I had another one right there in my hip pocket to plug in, a much better one, never read a Bible verse. So I could offer that to the pastors about reading their Bibles more accurately, and that's a skill they could then take to their people. So the reason I'm saying this is because some people would probably have been inclined to describe this impulse that they had to bring a couple other notes as God talking to them or God leading them or God nudging them. And I just have to tell you, the phenomenology was nothing like that. And I have problems with that whole approach to decision-making, et cetera. Many of you know about that. And part of my conviction is not only is the way people describe it not actually biblical, that is, you don't see this kind of thing happening in the Bible, the way people describe how they feel led regarding things, but I don't think you need it. I don't think that's the way God gets his work done, by whispering in our ear. I think God has a sovereign way of accomplishing things. Does he put desires in my heart? Does he ever put thoughts in my mind? Yeah, I'm sure he does, but I don't have to discern the source of the thought before I can figure out what to do with it. I don't have to ask myself the question, gee, where did that come from? Was that from me? Was that from God? Was that from the devil? Oh, it's a waste of time. Plus, there's no way you're going to be able, there's no technique that you're going to be able to use to figure out the source. The source is not important. Now, if the source is God, my conviction is you're going to know it immediately, because when God spoke in the New Testament, particularly the book of Acts, there was no ambiguity. It was a big supernatural kapow. An angel showed up, the Holy Spirit said something, Jesus appeared in a vision, there was a dream. I mean, these things were really obvious, okay? So you don't have to worry about that. If you get a thought, you do what I did. Ask yourself, is this a good idea? Does this make sense? And that's what I thought. And so wherever that thought came from, it did seem like a good idea. So I better pack these extra talks, and as it turned out, I needed them. So that's the way that kind of thing works. Let's see. Are we due for another break here? Looks like it, huh? All right. I have more I could say about Uganda mosquitoes. All I'm going to say is I didn't see a mosquito for 2 days, and then I saw my first mosquito. I had covered all my clothing with all the spray that you're supposed to put on to kill the bugs, you know, and keep them away from your stuff. And so I opened my closet while this clothing was sitting, and a mosquito flew out. That was in the closet with all this anti-mosquito clothing. Then I did see a mosquito on the inside of my mosquito net one night, so I squashed it. Problem is, it had already had dinner on me, so it was like red too late. Fortunately, I didn't get sick because I carried my pills, so I'm okay. Anyway, enough of the mosquitoes. Let's take a quick break. We've got a caller coming up here on Stand to Reason.
Are you looking for a way to be more involved in the STR community? When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR-trained Christians to graciously defend classical Christianity and classical Christian values. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our planning and ongoing work. As a strategic partner, you'll enjoy an automatic 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and bi-monthly insider updates, so you'll get the inside scoop on what's going on in the ministry, and you'll know what you can pray for. Become a strategic partner in the Stand to Reason community today by visiting str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email ocean@str.org. That's ocean@str.org.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come speak at a location near you? If so, just send a quick email to darcy@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To learn more, just go to str.org and click on the training tab at the top of the page.
Back at you here on Stand to Reason, final segment of this hour. Greg Kokel, your host. Number 855-243-9975. You can call anytime you want, as long as it's on a Tuesday between 4 and 6. Los Angeles time. Let's go to Nebraska. Is that Nebraska? No, it looks like Australia. Newcastle, Australia. To Michael. Hello, mate.
Hey, Greg. How you doing?
Welcome to the show, sir. I'm doing fine.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
It was a long time since I saw you last. I'm just looking at photos of you and I fishing in 2008.
Ah, 2008.
We went chasing.
Down in Australia?
Yep.
In Melbourne?
Yeah, we're in Tasmania.
Oh, no, it was in Tassie. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I actually went trout fishing in Tassie on one of my days off. Yeah.
Well, I have to correct your memory. It wasn't a day off. I remember it as being particularly funny. We were at a conference. You'd just given Never Read the Bible Verse as a talk, and the very next speaker got up preaching jumping Bible verses.
Huh.
And I looked at you, and you looked at me and went, you want to go for a fish?
Were you the guy who took me fishing?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, it's great. I remember you burned your butt on a hot wire, too. Do you remember that?
That's right.
You
yeah,
were crawling underneath the fence.
Yep.
He was crawling underneath the electrical fence.
Yeah, that hurt.
Yeah, but you caught a very big trout. You caught a very big trout in a very little stream, too. And I helped you catch that because I could see it and you couldn't. Anyway, we had some good memories. Thank you for that trip.
No problem. Now, I have to reiterate what you were saying earlier. You have people call up and say we're a strategic partner and everybody else should be. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a strategic partner. Everybody else should take up the challenge.
Thank you for that, brother. Thank you.
No worries. I sent a link through to Amy just about an article, somebody that I've been discussing various ethical and Christian issues with sent me. It's about a report that was done on, the name of the report exactly is,
So children raised without religion are kinder and more empathetic study finds, okay?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And I have it here in my hands. Amy printed it out for me in light of your call. And I had a quick read of it, so I got some thoughts on it.
Great. I'd love to hear them, because this is not an area I've trafficked in. I just don't know where to go with this one.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of thoughts, okay? Let's just say, all things considered, that on a fair assessment of behaviors that religious kids turn out not to be as nice as non-religious kids. Let's just say, keep in mind, by the way, that this was a testing across the board of different religions, but there was a special emphasis in terms of numbers on Christianity and Islam. And so then they aggregated their results and they said, hey, religious folk are not as nice. Let's just say that that's the case. Keep in mind that this has no bearing on whether a particular religion's claims about reality are true or false. So you can't, for example, what if it turned out that all atheists were really nice people and religious people were really nasty? Well, it wouldn't tell you anything about the merits of atheism versus some other religious view. I'm not saying that the results would be inconsequential, but I'm just making the point that it measures something different than the main thing that we're interested in, which is truth. Now, we're hoping that having the truth will have a salutary effect on somebody's character, which, especially in light of the truth being Christianity, you'd expect that to be the case. But I'm just making this distinction that all we're talking about here is who's nicer. And we're not talking about which view is true. Plus, the assessment is made across a number of religious beliefs, the major groups being Islam and Christianity, but there are others as well that were mixed in. Here is the real stickler, and I'd have to read this much more carefully than I have. But here's a couple of statements here. It says that children from religious households were more judgmental. Let me back up for a second. If they say they are less altruistic than atheistic kids who are more altruistic, the difficulty here is in defining what one means by altruistic. Okay. We know in general what it means, like nicer to other people and helping other people out, etc. But what qualifies as being pro-altruistic or non-altruistic in their value system? And here we have a little insight. The religious households were more judgmental. Well, that could mean one of two things. It could mean that they're condescending and nasty in their judgment, or it could mean that they simply make moral judgments, even if they're not condescending and nasty. And you know the distinction I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
Nowadays, if you make a moral distinction in Western culture regarding sexuality, especially homosexuality, you are immediately labeled as a person who is hateful, regardless of how you manifest the judgment that you're making. Whether you manifest it in a kind way or a belligerent way, that does not matter to the assessment that they're talking about. They presume you're hateful merely because you have moral compunctions regarding homosexuality and other forms of sexual variations, right? And so if you're a bad person simply because you think certain sexual behaviors are themselves wrong, you can see now how that's going to skew the entire assessment.
Yeah.
And so that's the question that I ask. This is, negative association between religiousness and children's altruism across the world. That's the official title of the study. And
And just the point, the annoying thing is that the link to the study doesn't work. I mean, to get to the study is a hassle. I can't actually look at the source documentation.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Here's another paragraph. The researchers also noted that older children who have been more indoctrinated into a particular religion, notice the way that the language they use to describe it, indoctrinated into a particular religion, quote, exhibited the greatest negative relations, close quote. What does negative relations mean? That's where it comes in. It talks about children being punitive and judgmental. So you wonder, in a study like this, you always have to ask the questions, what's the backstory here? You can't just look at, well, the conclusion that non-religious kids are nicer kids. What's your standard for niceness is the issue. It reminds me of when I was on a cruise once, and I went through the gym, and there was a class there, and the person who was running the class with on diet or whatever it was talking about how America has the 40th worst healthcare system in the world, just above Cuba, or maybe it was just below Cuba, I'm not sure. And it really maddened me when I heard that, because this statement means nothing unless you know the criterion by which they were judging who is highest and who is lowest. If you don't know the criterion, these kinds of assessments mean almost nothing. And that's the same idea here in a study like this. What is the criterion? If the criterion is niceness determined by lack of judgment, which means you don't say that homosexuality is not God's purpose, that it's wrong or something like that, well, then you're a nice person. If you're politically correct, then you're nice by definition. If you're not politically correct, then you're a nasty by definition. And so no wonder if that's the way one approaches it, religious folk are going to seem nastier than non-religious folk.
Brilliant. So I agree. While we've been talking, I've actually gone into the library at the uni. That I'm actually at my office at the university at the moment, and I've actually found why we can't find that paper.
Wait, you and actually found what? Say again.
Why we can't find the original study?
Oh, why is that?
This article has been retracted at the request of the authors. In our paper, we reported cross-cultural differences in how the religious environment of a child negatively impacted their sharing, the judgment of actions of others, and how their parents evaluated them. An error in this article, our incorrect conclusion of country of origin as a covariant in many analyses was pointing out in correspondence from a number of people. Huh. When we reanalyzed this data to correct this error, we found that the country of origin rather than your religious affiliation is the primary predictor of the outcomes.
Okay. All right. Well, see, there you go. There you go. Yeah, all this goes to show, good for them that they retracted the paper because they realized that it was compromised. But it goes to show there are lots of little things kind of behind the scenes that have an impact on the on the conclusions people draw. And that was the whole thing that I was raising. I didn't strain through this with a fine tooth comb, but I've seen things like this, and then I wonder, okay, wait a minute, I have some questions, I need some definitions, I want to know how the questions were asked, I wonder what does a person think is a kind action or whatever, you know, and what does he mean by judgmental and all that, and until you get that information, it's very hard to draw the assessment.
Exactly. And that's just going back to the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly right.
Perfect.
Just the facts, ma'am. There you go.
Thank you
so much, Michael. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you drawing attention to this and give me a chance to chat about it with you, okay?
Yeah, no problem. Hey, next time you're in Australia, we must find a reason to go fishing again.
All righty. I'd be happy to do it. But you're the guy who likes to fish skinny water. And for people who don't know what that means, it's like trout streams that are 4 inches deep. We were laying down on the stream, casting through wood and brambles with goats, you know, and cows mooing to the left and right of us. But we still got some fish. It was pretty amazing.
That's
of course, you got your shock, too, when you draw. He crawled under a wire that was a hot wire, like, you know, to keep the cattle out. And he rubbed his bum on it, and it really gave him a whack.
That was a mistake.
It was a shocking experience.
Next time I'll take you out chasing kingfish in Sydney Harbour.
Okay, we'll do that. Hey, thank you so much, Michael. Nice to hear from you again.
No worries, Greg.
All the best. Bye-bye. That was a fun fishing trip, I got to admit. Although, you know, Australia and Tassie, which is the island to the south of Australia, you know, these got some really nasty serpentine critters. And so, you know, it looks like a cow pasture to me, but, you know, that's the kind of place where one of these puff adders can just come out of nowhere and latch on to you, you know. So I'm always looking around my shoulder. But poor Michael, when he crawled underneath this electric fence, his back bumped the wire, and he got, like I said, a pretty big poke. But he'd seen a fish in this little bitty stream that was going through the pasture with a lot of grass going over it, and he kind of flicked this fly into the stream, and I could see it going down where he couldn't see it, and it went right to that fish came up, and it was a nice trout and whapped that fly, and I told him set the hook. So it was a partnership for that very nice fish we got together. Nice to hear from him. It's been a while. 2008, yeah. That's right. Right after my second daughter was born. All right, that's it, friends. Thank you so much for being part of our show. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven this week. Bye-bye.